Welcome, everyone, to Street and Curb, and this is the Street and Curb Radio Network. I am your designated driver today, Steve Carvelli, and this is where we discuss hot-button topics with a common-sense analysis. Now, today, we're going to be discussing the idea of sanctuary. So this is where we get the song in the opening from, Give Me Shelter. The idea of sanctuary is an interesting idea. You have people who want it, people who don't want it, and we seem to be on a pretty quick collision course with the new president coming in regards to the role of sanctuary cities, if they're legal, not legal, and how they're going to be enforced and not enforced. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Paul Oster, certified FICO Pro, the nation's credit repair man and the president of Better Qualified. 20 years of helping thousands of people just like you repair their credit. We have an A rating with the Better Business Bureau, and our clients have saved thousands of dollars with lower interest rates. We're currently helping people in your area, so take the first step. We have helped our clients to have hundreds of thousands of late payments, collections, and charge-offs deleted from their credit reports. Are you tired of getting denied? Tired of higher interest rates? This is your message. You can own a home. You can get out of debt. You can afford that new car. 20 years later, you have my word. If you're ready to help yourself, I know we will help you, and I'll guarantee it. Text the message CURB to the number 40691. Again, text the message CURB to the number 40691 for your free consultation and credit analysis.
Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. Today, we're discussing the role of sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, sanctuary municipalities. And I just want to give a little bit of a shout out. We will be expanding our radio network in January. We're going to be in Jackson, Mississippi, and North Jersey. So the Street and Curb network is expanding, sanctuary talk notwithstanding, but we are expanding. So let's discuss a little bit about the sanctuary idea. The Bible and references sanctuary cities. It's basically the Bible calls it the cities of refuge, where sanctuaries for which those who accidentally killed another could flee. And there were actually six of these sanctuary cities talked about in the Bible. And what's interesting about that, I can imagine that you'll have some old biblical towns in which everyone accidentally ran over someone with a chariot living there. But it's interesting because it's even addressed back then. Now, today's definition is a little different. First of all, a sanctuary city has no legal meaning. It basically means that sanctuary follows certain procedures that the police follow for illegal immigrants. Now, in a sanctuary city has procedures in place either by law or action that prevent municipal funds or resources to be applied in the furtherance or enforcement of federal immigration laws. They do not, the police do not, or municipal employees do not inquire about immigration status, nor do they help the federal enforcement of immigration law. Now, there are a lot of these sanctuary entities in this country. For instance, sanctuary states include California, Colorado, Connecticut, Illinois, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington. Not to throw a broad categorization on those states, but you know they're all overly blue. But we also have sanctuary cities such as Baltimore, Boston, Chicago, Denver, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Newark, Seattle, San Francisco. And they also have little cities such as Iowa City and Jackson, Mississippi. Now, why are they called sanctuary cities? Again, they do not honor immigration authorities and ICE requests for deporting, for deputizing local enforcement to enforce immigration law. In other words, ICE can represent and ICE can ask these municipalities to deputize local law enforcement to enforce immigration law and help with deportation of certain targeted individuals. In sanctuary cities, Those towns and municipalities and states do not allow that type of enforcement. So how the situation works is, in a sanctuary city, if ICE shows an individual is wanted, ICE sends a request to the local jail to detain for an additional 48 hours to begin the deportation process. In sanctuary cities, they do not detain these additional 48 hours. So they are released to the public. In non-sanctuary cities and states, they are retained longer according to the ICE request. So this is there is an exception here. And even in sanctuary cities, it's for certain documented crimes, they are held for the additional 48 hours. But that is not in every case. So again, why do these entities declare a sanctuary city or a sanctuary status? Well, it's thought to be a case of human rights. You know, people have an altruistic notion, an altruistic basic need to take care of their fellow man. It is a non-discriminatory need. You know, you want to have comfort for those who seek refuge. Yes, it's a very admirable need, and human rights may be an issue. You have to treat your fellow man with respect. But, you know, we'll discuss that a little bit later. The other aspect is a constitutional standpoint. It is not a crime to be undocumented. It is a civil violation to be undocumented. The remedy is a penalty, a dollar penalty, or a deportation. It is not incarceration. So there's a constitutional standpoint to why be a sanctuary city. So again, when it comes back to the sanctuary city, the police will not detain with the ICE request for the additional 48 hours. So again, it's interesting here. There's two main reasons why municipalities become sanctuary cities. We're going to discuss some of the motivations for that because I think they're suspect, as we'll see a little later on the show. But I want to go over a little bit about what sanctuary cities have asserted. Now, I don't necessarily agree with these assessments, but they have been asserted that sanctuary cities have lower crime rates, have higher household income, and have lower poverty rates. I don't necessarily agree with that because if you look at the states that I mentioned earlier, New York, San Francisco, Minneapolis, I don't know if crime is lower. I don't know if household income on a per capita basis is higher than non-sanctuary cities, but that is the reasoning they have behind it. Perhaps some of the reasoning is that undocumented immigrants do fill in the labor force and do take jobs that the rest of us don't want to take. However, they are taking jobs that the rest of us don't want to take or don't have the opportunity to take because they are there. So again, if you're here illegally and taking jobs, that is a whole other aspect in itself. One of the other aspects when it talks about lower crime rates, I guess they're not considering the Venezuelan gang that has supposedly taken over some towns in Colorado and some apartment buildings, Trent D'Aqua. I don't know if those stats are in the analysis or not, but you know, the assertions of lower crime in sanctuary cities has to be addressed and more statistically proven to me. When it comes to crime, perception weighs more heavily than statistics. It's the perception of crime that gets people upset. Whether the actual crime is higher or lower, it's incidental to the equation because the perception is pretty much controlling the narrative. Now, it's interesting. States, Colorado and Illinois, and to some extent, Los Angeles and California, are passing laws and to prevent the federal offensive in regards to enforcing immigration law in sanctuary cities. For instance, in Illinois, you have a governor, Governor Pritzker, and Colorado Governor Jared Polis have actually formed a coalition of two so far to fight the increasing threats of autocracy. And that is a quote. And strengthen democracy during Trump's second term. It's interesting because they've reached out to other governors, but there is no acknowledgement or proof that any other governors have taken up the fight. So they formed this coalition to band together to prevent the federal government from entering their states and entering their sanctuary cities to enforce illegal immigration law. So right now, it remains a coalition of two. It did state that they have reached out to Republican governors, and no Republican governor has taken up the cause. Now, Republican governors generally like the state's authority and exert the state's rights on the federalism idea. But so far, it's a coalition of two. So it's interesting that they're concerned about the autocracy that's being formed in the government. But again, what they're trying to do is bind together states to create their own autocracy to thwart any kind of federal interference. So again, this goes to the greater argument and the greater issue here is what is a more applicable issue here? And I think it's federal versus state rights. Can the states prohibit a federal government enforcement of federal law? And what is the role of the state government in reporting and protecting its citizens? So these are the big issues. I mean, the human interest story about, you know, it's the right thing to do as a person or the constitutional issue, I think are secondary to the broader issues of the role of the state and the federal government. We're going to take a quick break. Today, we're talking sanctuary. Give me shelter. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm your designated driver today, Steve Carvelli. And, you know, it's interesting that when the president takes his inaugural oath in January of next year, he is sworn to protect the Constitution and the sovereignty of this nation. And the sovereignty of this nation, part of that goes into the borders. And, you know, there's a question whether state officials or even local municipal officials have the same requirement or duty to their constituency, to protect the town, to protect the state, to protect the livelihood of the people in the state, besides the safety of the people in the state. So this is the whole issue about whether to enforce federal immigration law. You know, it's interesting that the immigrants that are coming across the border are applying for asylum, political asylum. However, a vast, vast majority of them are not going to be granted asylum because they are economic refugees and they're not entitled to asylum. Now, it is unfortunate in a lot of countries, in a lot of third world countries, that the economies don't support people earning a good living, you know, protecting their families and providing for their families. However, not everyone can live in the United States. That's why there's immigration laws. It protects our sovereignty. It protects our way of life. And it's difficult to enforce when you have sanctuary cities that do not abide by that. But it is unfortunate. Maybe we can do something else as a nation to help people in their own country before they trek over the border. But economic refugees are just that. They're generally not entitled to asylum. They will not be proven for asylum. There may not be a proof for asylum. And eventually, in states like in New York, where your court date is 3 to 4 years down the line, you will be denied asylum and be sent back. Problem is that a lot of these people are going to assimilate into this country, or basically, for lack of a better word, hide in this country and not go back. So it is the lack of proper due process of our asylum hearings. It is a lack of enforcement of tracking down the people once we register them, because you don't have to register now in certain states online. So it is difficult to track these people down. But again, you know, asylum is that. Asylum is a very specific political persecution over your religious, over your political beliefs, that you feel you have an immediate threat if you return to your country. And a great, great majority of these people are not asylum eligible, even though they call themselves asylum seekers. They are economic refugees. You know, this is part of the issue that we're having here. It is unfortunate that economic refugees are just that, they're refugees, and they're not entitled to guaranteed protections or admittance in this country because why? Not everyone can live here. So it is interesting that we're heading into a pretty much a pitchfork battle here. And I want to bring up something that's even more interesting. The sanctuary city of Denver in the ultra-liberal state of Colorado. And remember what I talked about earlier, the state of Colorado's governor has formed a coalition of two with Illinois to prevent this type of federal autocracy that they feel is impeding on their state rights. But the governor of Colorado and the mayor of Denver. Mike Johnson is the mayor of Denver. He is really positioning himself and he's kind of posturing himself as the leader of a pseudo Tiananmen Square street credibility response to the federal government. Johnson has publicly stated numerous times that he will defy and mobilize Denverites to prevent the feds from deporting anyone. And it's interesting because the new border czar coming in, Tom Homan, who actually worked for ICE, wants to remove illegal immigrants from day one of Trump's administration who have criminal records. But Johnston wants to create a Tiananmen-style moment for the country. The problem with that, there is no similarity with Tiananmen Square and what's happening in Denver and what potentially can happen in Denver. If you remember, then Tiananmen Square in China was a revolt conducted by the citizens of China, disaffected students, disaffected classes of China, who felt that their freedoms were being impinged upon by the state system. These were all citizens of China. They were marginalized, they were yearning to be free, but citizens nonetheless, demanding more of their government and more rights given to them as individuals. Johnston, he wants citizens to defend illegal immigrants from the government of the citizens. It doesn't make sense. He wants to defy a federal order that not allow local municipal officials and government officials to help with ICE trying to deport illegal immigrants who have criminal records. This is the first stage of deportation from Denver. And he's vowed to mobilize people and Denverites at the towns, at the city borders to prevent ICE from entering in. It's just absolutely amazing. Newt Gingrich came out and said that the mayor of Denver doesn't seem to understand that the U.S. Army settled the question of states, counties, and cities defying the federal government in a meeting in Appomattox in 1865 when General Lee surrendered. It is the classic federal versus state right enforcement issues and what the jurisdiction of the state versus the federal. Remember, the federal case is regards to illegal immigration. If you harbor and prevent an illegal immigrant from being deported or being acted upon by ICE or any other government agency, it is a federal crime. So we are positioning ourselves into a pretty big battle here. I think it's more of a political issue that he's posturing either for running for something or making a case for another party or something like that. But whatever the case, it's coming up for a battle. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to discuss the dynamics of this upcoming battle when we come right back here on Street and Curb. Welcome back, everyone. This is the Give Me Shelter Show. We're also talking about sanctuary cities, states, towns. And in the last segment, I was talking about the wondrous mayor of Denver, who's going to start a war of one against the federal government. And it's interesting to state that, you know, when we talked about the president that has to take the oath of office in January about upholding the sovereignty of the nation, does that apply to the Denver mayor about upholding the sovereignty and the integrity of the city of Denver? I don't understand the motivation, but let's analyze what's the motivation. Let's go back. Is his motivation similar to the human nature issue that we discussed initially on the show? Well, maybe. Look, everyone wants to help people to some extent, as long as it doesn't affect or overly affect my family. It doesn't affect me personally, my income, or create a hardship for me. And I think allowing illegal immigrants who have a criminal record in your town and not have any kind of jurisdictional authority over them to give them the federal government to deport, you know, it's hard to make human nature a good thing because you can't promote someone's good well-being in the fact that they could really diminish or affect someone else's well-being. So you can't enforce someone's rights that are infringing on someone else's rights. So I think that argument's weak. The constitutional issue, Well, that's going to be a big fat no, because it is a federal crime to harbor a fugitive that is being asked for by the federal government. It's, you know, to prevent their deportation, to prevent federal enforcement from collecting a fugitive in your state or municipality, and harboring that and preventing the apprehension is a federal crime. So I don't know if that's going to be a constitutional argument or not, because, you know, it's just against the law. And it comes to the third thing, and this is where I think it really is. It's political posturing. Kamala Harris has just gone through $1.5 billion of taxpayer and donor money for a failed election. It is now commonly assumed that she will not be, or should not be, or should not be permitted to be the next candidate for president on the Democratic Party in the next election cycle. When you blow $1.5 billion in 8 weeks and have nothing to show for it, yeah, there could be an argument made for that. So I think a lot of the governors and a lot of mayors are looking to posture up and create some street cred, at least with the liberal folk, about where their position may be in the next election cycle. So this makes a lot of sense. It makes the sense that this is a self-interest aspect for the mayor of Denver. Political posturing. Is he really willing to go to war with the federal government and create hardship for Denver people and perhaps injury and damage to property to enforce and to prevent illegal immigrants who have criminal records from leaving his town? I don't know how many Denverites are really going to take up arms on this. You know, I think Denverites have to really consider this and, you know, you're mile high if you follow your mayor here. You got to come out of the clouds, and you got to really work on your self-interest and the preservation of the city of Denver. You know, this is illegal. This is not allowed. And it's interesting that the mayor is really posturing his. The new enforcement agent is threatening to put, you know, Mayor Johnston in jail over this. And, you know, of course, Mayor Johnston says, yeah, I'll go to jail over this. It's just like, this is a battle that's worthy of no inherent benefit to any of us. And again, if you're really fighting to keep an illegal immigrant who has a criminal background, who can affect the constituency of your town and city at the expense of your self-interest, you're not a good politician and should be voted out anyway. So again, you know, since Trump has won office, we have seen a broad constituency of Democratic mayors and governors forming coalitions or attempting to form coalitions to prevent a government autocracy from an imperial presidency that they think Trump will be. It's amazing, but the sole fact that they're banding together, it's a collusionary idea, forming a state type of autocracy to prevent federal enforcement. So the hypocrisy still lives in this country, and it really lives down to more of a state and local level. Now, speaking of autocracies, and I'm going to change topics here a little bit, happened to catch the new movie, Gladiator 2. And it's interesting, and I've always told, and I've made a statement on this show, that politicians should, you know, stay in their lane and not really talk politics. And a week or two ago, I talked about Denzel Washington talking about misinformation and how misinformation that he believes is affecting qualified decisions from the constituencies in looking at the issues and making a valid vote. So now comes Gladiator 2, which in a masking and the grandeur of ancient Rome is also making a political statement. Why? Because the premise in the whole Gladiator 2, just like Gladiator 1, is to upset the autocracy of the emperors and return Rome to the Republic and the power to the senators, which in turn are elected by the people. It's interesting that, you know, Rome ceased to become a republic around 27 BC when Augustus was determined emperor by the Senate. This movie takes place in 200 AD because the two emperors they're talking about, the twin emperors, that's when they ruled. So again, it goes right back to the issue that, and I don't want to give away the movie in case you guys haven't seen it, but the whole premise is to return Rome to the Republic from which it was and against the autocracy. So I guess we're getting a lot of buzz talk right now about the term autocracy. Again, it's going to be a misused term, just like in the election cycle, the term fascist was misused. Even the term Hitler was misused. But now we're going to get into the term autocracy and how that's going to be misused. So it is interesting. You know, what type of presidency we're going to have? Yes, I do feel we're going to have a little more of an imperial presidency coming up because Trump is not fettered by having to run for re-election. When you're not fettered to having to run for re-election, you really can implement your course of action without worrying about classes of people who may vote against you and constituencies and who you're beholden to. So you don't have that worry. You can really rule and do what you want all the way through the election cycle, all the way up to the day that the new president is inaugurated. So it gives you a lot of freedom. It gives you a freedom to really be president for 4 years, as opposed to 2 years and having to run again halfway into your administration. So, you know, we are going to have an imperial presidency. Now, whether we call that an autocracy or not, it's hard to say because autocracies don't have time limits. And this one has a time limit of 4 years. So it's really interesting on how that works, that autocracy is now going to be the term of the year and being bandied about by people of both parties. I think on the Republican side, it's more of a positive influence. On the Democratic side, it's more of a controlled resistance influence. So again, you know, that's what we talk about here on Street and Curb. We look at a lot of issues and look at a common sense approach. And we have to analyze people's motivations on why they do certain things. The altruistic human nature of helping fellow man, generally not on the forefront of a politician's desire to do things. However, protecting of the sovereignty, protecting of the sovereign state, and protecting of the citizens and of the citizens within your jurisdiction are primary. So we're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, we're going to kind of close it up today on Street and Curb. So join us. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. And to wrap today's show up, one of my favorite lines in both Gladiators is what we do in life echoes in eternity. And I don't know about that, but I do know that radio waves, especially this show, will echo in eternity because they're bouncing in the universe as we speak and will bounce for many, many, many years. But for really your life actions to echo in eternity, we have to memorialize history and remember and have to stop the continuous present day erasing of history. So I guess there is some words of wisdom to that. I think with radio, it's more applicable. But again, they're words to live by. And again, you know, Gladiator gives us a lot of words to live by. So we'll see everyone next week on Street and Curb. Remember, I'm your host. And keep your activities to the road and stay within the guardrails. We'll see you next week.